Hello, and welcome to Thank the Academy. I'm your host, Kristen, and that's Zach. And then there's our producer, Kayla.
Howdy.
Hello.
Hello.
We're back.
We didn't even plan that.
Can you believe it?
Oh, hello, friends. It's been quite a long time, but we are very happy to be back.
Many moons and months.
Yes. But we're back because of many things, the most important being that the SAG-AFTRA strike is over.
Huzzah.
So we are back in your ears. But additionally, we did take the opportunity of the kind of forced hiatus to take an extended hiatus through the holidays as we have been busy.
Traveling, working.
Yes.
All of the things that people do.
But new year, new us. We're back to it, back to our regular schedule, and we'll be coming at you with our normal content starting next week.
Yeah, it seems really strange that we are going to record this again because it's been a long time.
So for this episode, we wanted to do two quick things for you just to kind of get everything back in motion. So the first thing, we just want to talk about the SAG-AFTRA strike and the deal that has been agreed to and that kind of stuff since we spent such a significant amount of time in our last episode detailing the strike and what was going on. So we want to just, you know, clarify some of that. And then normally at the end of the year, we do a holiday episode that is kind of our holiday and wrap-up episode in which we do our big five of the year, meaning our big five awards are best picture, best director, best actor, best actress, and best screenplay. And unfortunately, we didn't do that either. And unfortunately, we only watched 8 best pictures this year.
This year being 2023. Ah!
So anyways, we're still going to do a quick little wrap up for you so that we can move right along and get into our 2024 season of Thank the Academy.
Mm-hmm. So if you didn't know about the strike or whatever, you could go back and listen to our other episode detailing like everything that people were wanting to get actors from the strike. The writers struck over the summer, and so did the actors from the studios, who are the big top executive people who produce all the movies. We have a lot of detailed information in that episode. But in this episode, we're just going to go through sort of like the biggest takeaways from what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So specifically, we're going to talk about the SAG-AFTRA deal, which is what we talked about in our previous episode, because that's what affected our podcast.
Right.
Additionally, I'm a member of SAG-AFTRA, so I was very personally affected. I was, in fact, a gate captain for the entirety of the strike.
Yay.
So if you did come out and see me at any point, I was at the Disney lot every Thursday. If you came out and said hi to me, which I know some of you friends did, thank you. It was a great time of camaraderie and terrible circumstances, but good people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny just reflecting on this past year and just like what it's meant for me, not just as an actor, but as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so much more connected to the community of actors here in LA because of this, meeting not only like celebrities and people that you know on your screen that are coming out and walking and now I know them on a first name basis, which is very fun. But also like just looking at the droves and droves of people that are actors in this industry, in this union, who work regularly and meeting so many people and feeling less alone in my pursuit, I guess. So that was just all very cool. I'm trying to like have a positive takeaway from a bad situation. And while I have a moment, I just want to shout out to all of the strike captains that made it so bearable, who made it such a positive experience. You are forever people that I will admire and follow your careers. And thank you for that.
Hear, hear.
So the strike lasted 118 days. The tentative agreement was reached on November 8th. It ended up being ratified and all that kind of stuff. The SAG union voted yes on the agreement. So we kind of just wanted to talk about some of the things that were accomplished and some things that maybe, I don't know,
are to be future accomplishments.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to try to stay positive, especially in this episode. One of the quotes that I saw about it was from a union representative who said, quote, "Nobody gets everything they want in any deal, but this is a good deal, a fair deal, and both a big step in the right direction and an insurance policy for the next contract." And I think that's kind of the mentality. No matter what what you're negotiating, a negotiation is just that. You have to concede things in order to get things. And mm-hmm. the hope is that as a union and as an industry, we can keep taking steps forward. So some of the steps that we did take forward with this contract were wage increases, which is very exciting. Actors get a hike in basic minimums for a variety of projects for film and television. Anyone with a speaking role, minimums increased by 7% and another 4% in July and then a 3.5% next year. Background actors also are going to get an increase of 11%, which is exciting for everybody. There's also a bunch of stuff about streaming residuals and bonuses for hit shows and movies on streaming platforms, which was one of the major things that we kind of went into the strike worrying about, is the new world of streaming and how residuals don't look the same way that they used to, because series don't get 100 episodes, and how can that still be something that's financially viable for actors? So that was one of the things that has been adjusted in this new contract, along with things like improvements in pensions and everything like that. The other major thing that is like very tangible, at least for me, is that there have been a lot of parameters put around auditions, mm-hmm. specifically virtual auditions, which is something we talked about pretty extensively. There are guidelines about how much text can be included in an audition, what is the limit that people have to memorize, and then like caveats so that people don't have to memorize everything if it's like a large amount of dialogue, options for both in-person and virtual, because sometimes being in person is better, and so they have to have an option for that. But also sometimes you can't make that, and sending in a tape is easier. So just kind of putting a lot more protections around actors so that you're not forced to spend time and money that you don't have doing something for free, essentially.
Right.
Because it is part of the job, and it needs to be a two-way street for both actors and casting directors and offices and such.
And the thing to remember is that all of these things have to be written down
literally
in a legal contract so that they can be followed. Not necessarily because anything bad or wrong is happening, but if it's not written down and voted on and approved, then it doesn't happen.
Yeah, then people get run over. So. And of course, we wanted to briefly touch on the topic I know is the biggest point of contention for all of us, which is AI. There have definitely been some strong parameters put around it. There have been some pushback about specific language in this contract that may not be as firm or inclusive as a lot of people would like. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can.
Well, and part of what if you want to really go and dig through the language, you're welcome to. We'll put resources in the notes for the show if you want to go read things yourself.
Yeah.
The thing that's tricky is it's the way that things are worded. The negotiating committee has said that everyone is very well protected.
Yes.
But from the actor's point of view, sometimes it seems like we don't really know how protected we'll be. And I think the thing to come away with is we'll find out.
Yeah, it's new territory. And I do feel very empathetic, I guess, towards negotiators, because nobody knows what the rules need to be in order for this to happen. Because whatever happens, the future is coming. And there's no use denying that. So how do we protect ourselves within that? A lot of the vernacular around the protections and the inclusion in the contract, it's hard to know how firm it is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things are like talking about what a digital replica is, what can be used, what can't be used, what needs to have consent from a performer, and what can be just done as normal. Actress Justine Bateman has been pretty outspoken about her complaints. I don't want to say that I 100% agree with everything she's expressed, but one of the things that she says is an exception which allows employers to use digital doubles without a performer's consent when the project is, quote, comment, criticism, scholarship, satire, or parody, a docudrama, or historical or biographical work. And she says that actors may find themselves in a project you never consented to, doing things you were uninformed of for no compensation at all. And these are things where it's hard to know what the parameters are, because there are a lot of parameters around day-to-day usage. So for example, if a digital replica is made of a performer, express and explicit consent has to be given both from the actor and the producing company of what is going to be used. And that digital replica can only be used in accordance with what is exactly written in the script, with the exception of small gestures, movements, lips, that kind of thing.
And specifically, whatever project you're being replicated for, that replica can only be used for that project.
For that singular project. And actors, including background actors, will be paid for the amount of time that they would have, quote, been working. So if they're expecting a day rate, they're going to get a day rate. One of the things that is both good and bad is things like there's a clause in which allows background actors, if, say, a background actor's digital replica is bumped up to have a line, right? That actor will be paid as if they've been bumped up to have a line. The downside of that is that that
you
actor
didn't get to
do that.
Do that line. Yeah. Which is like the fun part of acting is
the joy
acting.
Of it. Yeah. Exactly. So things like that, which are questionable, but there is still pretty strong protection, I guess, against a lot of things, including the way in which your image is used, the words that you're allowed to speak, the parameters around what is kind of creatively allowed to be done with that.
And the other thing, too, is it's going to be interesting to see, like, if they say, well, it would have taken a day to film this or 2 days, you don't really know.
Right.
There's lots of history of making movies to try to come up with the best guess, but, like, some things take time and some things don't take time. And like, if you're not there to really work those hours, you don't really know how long it would have taken.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. And I don't know. I think for me, it'll be interesting to see how profitable this is. People seem to think that it will be not profitable to use digital AI for a lot of things, or digital replicas and AI for a lot of things, because it just costs money to make and we aren't as experienced with it yet.
Well, and right now, the AI is not powerful enough to do what they're saying it can do.
Right.
But it will
but
be
it will
soon.
Be. Yeah.
We just don't know when it will be.
Exactly.
And so it's good to jump the gun on these things in the contract.
Yeah.
And then as AI develops and becomes more and more powerful, which it will very, very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Having
we'll
parameters
see what happens.
In place already is essential.
Yeah.
For sure. The only exception to having it be exactly as what it's written in the script is that, quote, employers will be able to digitally alter a performer's body movement as well without their consent when the photography or soundtrack of the performer remains substantially as scripted, performed, and or recorded. So there's like a little bit of like fudge room, I guess, that is a little bit concerning. And of course, you can learn more about this. I don't think it's worth it for Zach and I, who have no legal background, to extrapolate about what this contract
There's
is.
There's tons of people who are way smarter than
yes.
us talking about it from both sides of the issue. So
exactly. Please inform yourself, as we have tried to be informed ourselves, especially when it came to voting on this contract. But we are not the mouthpiece you want to get all your information from about this. We just felt like we owed it to our listeners to talk a little bit about what has actually happened, since we talked so extensively about what happened way back in June.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of wrap everything up about this, we would love to move on, because that's what we're trying to do in our own lives in general. We're very proud of SAG-AFTRA and the union for being on strike for 118 days. That is a long time to be out of work. It was a very challenging time. Morale was so low. And so it was amazing to see people continue to come together, continue to fight. And that pushback makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it throughout history that when people come together and use their union as a way to negotiate and protect themselves and pursue that power, it works. And so in the case of this contract, while I personally think that there were things that could have been negotiated for longer, that's kind of my personal takeaway, is I wish that maybe we had stayed on strike for like 2 more weeks. But that's here nor there. This is what happened. The strike ended on November 8th. And we're very, very proud and happy with the fact that we were able to accomplish as much as we did.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully this is the stepping stone for the future, and that when our contract is up, we'll be able to negotiate from a great starting place. Anything else you want to say about it?
No.
Okay. With that, why don't we move right along just to kind of wrap up the year of 2023?
Yeah. So we did this last year, and basically we're going to go through what our picks, our favorites of the things that won awards that we talked about last year. We're going to go through our favorite, each of our favorite, best picture, best director, best screenplay, and that's either adapted or original. Best actor, which is either best actor or supporting, same for actress. And then a wild card where we can pick just some other
things
fun thing that won. And then these will be from what we talked about last year, which was the 48th Academy Awards through the 55th Academy Awards, which is not very long of a time.
But this is Thank the Academy Final Awards. So to start it off, why don't we start with our award winners for Best Writing? And this is both adapted and original because whatever. Zachary, what have you selected?
I selected for my favorite award winner for writing, I picked Kramer versus Kramer.
Okay,
Robert Benton
good.
From the 52nd Academy Awards.
Congratulations. That is a very good screenplay. It really held up.
Yeah. And yours?
I picked, you're going to be a little surprised, I think, I picked Annie Hall.
Oh, interesting.
Because it laid the foundation for some of my favorite movies of all time. And as we talked about in that episode, my favorite genre of all time. Mm-hmm. So I had to pick it as a very trailblazing, amazing option.
Mm-hmm. For my best actress, I picked Katharine Hepburn for On Golden Pond.
I picked her as well.
The 54th Academy Awards. I mean, of looking at all of the like actresses who won through this period, 48 through 55, I mean,
she's
obviously
standout.
This is the top.
Yeah, she's the best. And it's such a good role for her. It is a challenging role, but also a very true to her role. So I felt very good about giving her this award.
Mm-hmm. For best actor, I chose a supporting role.
Oh, okay.
And this is Christopher Walken in The Deer Hunter.
I kind of thought you were going to pick him.
From the 51st Academy Awards.
When you told me that we could include supporting actors, I was like, I think he wants to go Deer Hunter. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just such an amazing performance. I think looking at all the male performances in this, like award-winning male performances, from 48 to 55. I don't know how you top this.
I do.
Okay.
Because I picked someone different.
And that is?
I will also say I had a choice and then I had a backup choice and neither of them were Christopher Walken.
Oh boy.
But my choice was Dustin Hoffman
in
Kramer versus Kramer.
I mean, yeah, it's also a very good performance.
It's an amazing performance. With a special thanks or I don't know.
Shout out. To Timothy Hutton?
No, to Henry Fonda.
Oh, okay.
For On Golden Pond. I loved his performance, too.
Well, and also, like, shout out to Timothy Hutton. That's a great performance,
it
too.
Is good,
but
yes.
All right. For my best director win of this period, I chose a Robert Redford for Ordinary People.
I was very close to picking him as well, but I did not.
Well, and I picked him also just about everything we talked about when we talked about the making of this. He had his hand in this, like, so much as a director.
Yeah.
More than a lot of the other films that we've talked about in general.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot to work with the actors and guide them and, like, work through their performances and create a very, like, specific set so that everybody could act the way that they needed to.
Yeah. Totally agree with
And it was his
that.
First...
Yeah, that's
time.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I did pick someone different, though. I picked Robert Benton for Kramer versus Kramer.
Okay.
Because of actually very similar things.
Yeah.
I think that it's a movie that all the elements work together very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
The colors and the music, but the performances and the focus of the cinematography and all that kind of stuff. Plus, I think it's incredible to create an atmosphere where a child can perform so well.
Yeah.
And that is like miraculous to me. And it's a movie for actors, you know?
Yeah.
It's an acting dream. The same way that Ordinary People is, but in my opinion, Kramer versus Kramer was a little bit more elevated, and that's why I picked him.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, for the biggest award of all, the best picture of these 8 pictures. What did you select?
No surprise here. I picked The Deer Hunter. I mean, it's just an amazing movie all around. Like,
yeah.
It has a little bit that all Best Picture winners have. Like, mm-hmm. There's really good elements of, like, romance. There's really good elements of, like, family drama. There's really good elements of war movies, of the epic, of the, like, buddy film. There's, like, very specific scenes of all these different genres to make up this film, which, granted, is a very heavy film that not a lot of people want to watch or rewatch.
And a film you can't really watch after you've watched it.
Yeah. But it's just such an amazing film.
Yeah.
Very, you know, well made.
It was amazing to me when we recorded our episode for that film. I feel like it's one of our stronger episodes. I usually recommend it to people because it was very impactful to me personally. But it's funny reflecting on it because I remember talking to my dad on the phone about it. And he just had such a visceral response. We talked about it for so long. And I don't talk to my dad about movies, really, like, unless they're Star Wars.
It's also interesting because since we have watched that movie, I have thought about that movie's wedding scene also every time I've seen a movie since with sort of like a wedding type party romantic scene. Like, I don't know what it is about it. That scene just sticks out to me very strongly because of, like, just how fun they're having. Aww. Like, they're just dancing so hard and it's just super fun. The camera lingers around the room for a long time. Yeah, it's just a great, great film.
Yeah.
And now for your best picture.
Oh, boy. I told myself I would
choose... Chariots of Fire?
No. Oh, my God. No.
Gandhi?
No. Incorrect. 2 out of 8, Ron.
All right. And it is...
I had a hard time picking. I haven't even completely chosen. I have 2.
Dude, you got to have one.
All right. I'm going to go. I'm just going to commit with what I wrote first.
Great.
I'm going to go with Ordinary People.
All right, great.
I really love that movie. It is just a beautiful script. I think it was very indicative of the time. The performances are really, really good. And if I could have given Donald Sutherland an Oscar, I would. I think about it all the time. I think about that scene of him sitting at the table so often. It just comes up in my mind a lot. That was really impactful to me.
And the fact that that performance that he gave that's in the movie is across from Robert Redford.
Amazing.
Because they reshot it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, all around, it's just really good. I really liked it. I will say my other option was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I really liked. And I didn't give it any awards, and I kind of wanted to give it Best Picture. But I really enjoyed that one as well. But I also wondered if I liked that one so much because I like the book so much and how much I would like the movie separate from the book. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So I went with Ordinary People. I'm going to commit to that.
Great. I have 2 wild cards.
Okay.
So these are just any award that's not one of the ones we've mentioned. My first wild card is for Best Art Direction for Star Wars.
Okay. I had written down costume design, so I'll lump that in with yours.
Yes, and the Art Direction Award went to John Barry, Norman Reynolds, and Leslie Dilley at the 50th Academy Awards. Of course, I mean, they're the first ones doing Star Wars.
Right.
And so everything Star Wars that has come after has been built upon this film. And I mean, it's like the most iconic looking I mean, everything about it is just like so culturally iconic, so hard not to shout them out.
Definitely worth the award.
I mean, for and costume too,
right? That's why I was thinking that, because it's just such a unique world.
My second wild card is for Best Visual Effects for Alien. That goes to H.R. Giger, Carlo Rambaldi, Brian Johnson, Nick Alder, and Dennis Ehling. I mean, Alien is an amazing movie, and the visual effects are very good.
Yeah, nice. Those are good. I had a couple as well that I think I want to mention.
Okay.
First, I want to say Best Film Editing to Raging Bull. Thelma Schoonmaker.
Huzzah.
And of course, I did an entire episode about her. Her editing skills, but it's her first big win, and of course it was an iconic editing, so that movie wouldn't be what it is without her.
True.
I also wanted to shout out best sound design and score for Jaws.
Ah, yes.
Because that's essential to the film. And I love the history of sound design in horror movies. Mm-hmm. I think that's really great. I was going to say The Omen won this category as well. Like, it's very impressive to me because a lot of the time we don't count horror movies or thriller movies as like Oscar-y movies. Mm-hmm. But the sound design that is required to make them the genre that they are is so impressive to me. We talked about that a lot with The Exorcist. So I just had to shout that out.
Well, and I was going to say Jaws for score, but I wouldn't want to say Jaws for score above Star Wars for score. So
yeah, they're both important.
Yeah.
It's a combo, though, of everything for me with Jaws. I think that's pretty cool.
And it's John Williams, nonetheless.
Yes, a classic. I also, of course, I wanted to make sure to highlight Best Cinematography for Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that was another one I almost mentioned.
Yeah, you got to say it. It's just really good.
Yeah.
One last one I just want to throw out there that talk about a lot. I just want to highlight some things I thought were important that don't get a lot of attention, which is Best Documentary for Harlan County, USA.
Yes.
Because we just went through a massive strike, mm-hmm. and this documentary is an incredible documentary that is an inspiration to union workers everywhere. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that is our show for today.
Yeah. Sorry that it's kind of weird, but we're getting back into it. We have another episode coming out starting next week. So we will be back on our normal schedule of Best Picture and then an Academy Archives every Thursday going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll, of course, update you if there's any weird breaks. But hopefully we should be back to normal.
Huzzah. So join us next week when we discuss the 56th Academy Awards and the Best Picture winner, The Terms of Endearment.
Thank you for tuning in to Thank the Academy. You can follow us on social media at Thank the Academy Podcast on Instagram and at Thank Academy Pod on Twitter. If you enjoy listening to the show, make sure to leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe on your favorite streaming platform. The theme song was created by the one and only Noah Heisinger. Join us next week on Thank the Academy.